Stephen, couldn't be better timing on your new book.
Hi, Michael. Well, thanks so much for having me and appreciate the kind words. And, yeah, we tried to put this out right now because, obviously, for the next 4 or 5 weeks, you're going to be hearing a debate about whether this economy is fair, whether the rich pay their fair share of taxes. We heard that all disputed in the last election. And there's so much of a difference, an almost Grand Canyon difference between the truth about these issues and what politicians say.
The book is called Who's the Fairest of Them All? It's posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com, where, of course, you can still download the more timely than ever, the new ebook by me, The Odds Against Obama, Why History and Logic Make the President a Likely Loser. That also available at michaelmedved, M-E-D-V as in victory, ED.com. Okay, Stephen, last Friday, the whole world of liberals and of Democrats was celebrating these magnificent new unemployment numbers for the first time since the very, very beginnings of his presidency, the unemployment number below 8%. Does this prove definitively, as the president and vice president insist, that Obamanomics works?
Well, do you know that old line from that song, "Been down so long, everything starts to look up"? I think that's the way to characterize this employment report. It was a decent report. I mean, we finally got the unemployment rate below 8% for the first time in over 3.5 years at 7.8%. But my goodness, why in the world are we celebrating a 7.8% unemployment rate? And we should have unemployment way lower than it is today. Anyone who doesn't have a job that they want or doesn't have a job at all or can't find a full-time job knows that this is still a miserable job market. And I find it interesting. It's a real indictment of the Obama economy that they celebrated a report with and by the way, can I make one other point, Michael? Don't be fooled by this 7.8% number. You know this because you talk about it a lot, and I've talked about it with you. The real unemployment rate in this country, according to the new report, is not 7.8%. It's 14.6%. Those are people who can't find a full-time job or have just given up looking for a job. That's over 20 million Americans.
Because we still are at historically some of the lowest levels ever, aren't we, of the percentage of adults who are actually employed.
Well, that's exactly right. In fact, that's the big curse of this economy right now, is that so many millions of Americans have just thrown up their hands and said, there's no jobs out there, I'm not looking anymore. And this is a real problem, because if we want strong economic growth, we need people working. And, you know, this is an administration, I wish Mitt Romney would hit Barack Obama harder on this point, that this administration thinks the way you create jobs is through more unemployment benefits and more food stamps. You know, and instead of creating jobs, we've created welfare.
Well, see, this is one of those things that a lot of people think, oh, that's racist and you can't even say that and you're getting to that dangerous 47% territory. But one of the things that most Americans don't know, and we've got to remind them right now, is that the expansion of food stamps under Obama, where food stamps have almost doubled, is very deliberate. And it was part of the stimulus package. Part of the stimulus package was a deliberate attempt, and it's in the legislation, to increase the number of people who receive food stamps. If I had the chance to ask the president any one thing, I'd ask him this. I'd say, do you view the increase of the number of people on food stamps in your administration, where it's nearly doubled, do you view that as an achievement or a sign of failure? And he should say,
well, I think it's a great point because, you know, we in our editorial page at the Wall Street Journal have contrasted Bill Clinton with Barack Obama. And Bill Clinton quite rightly, you know, boasted about how many people his welfare reforms, with Republican Congress, of course, reduced welfare caseloads. And that was one of the great successes in American history. Barack Obama goes around the country, you know, celebrating how many people he's put on food stamps. And by the way, you know this, Michael, his administration is going around the country actually urging people in the inner cities to go on food stamps because he's telling them, you know, you shouldn't be ashamed if you're on the dole. By the way, this is a way to stimulate the economy. It helps the local economy here when you go on food stamps.
Well, we've actually covered on the radio show the Agriculture Department program to have SNAP
outrageous
parties. People should have parties where they bring people who aren't on food stamps and kind of encourage them, show how easy it is to sign up. Now, speaking of how easy it is to sign up, Joe Biden, I think, did just a last week a great promotion for your new book, Who's the Fairest of Them All? Because Joe Biden, you heard his comments, right?
Of course. Well, which ones, Michael? He's made so many dumb comments in the last, week. I can't keep up with them all. I heard the first one when he said that, the last 4 years have been,
the middle class has been buried.
Right. And then the second one I heard him say, which I guess was Thursday or Friday, when he said that yeah, we're going to raise $1 trillion of taxes on these rich people. We're proud of it.
Yeah,
something to that extent.
Exactly. He said, rich people don't want to pay more taxes. My heart breaks. We're going to raise your taxes. We're going to raise them $1 trillion. What's wrong with that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I find that statement totally offensive. And you know me, Michael, I'm not a rich person. I'd like to be rich, but
someday.
I am not rich. But I think that one of the things I worry about this great, great country of ours is this denigration of success and denigration of people who've created businesses and have made money and made profits. I mean, Washington and Joe Biden and Barack Obama and so many of the politicians in Washington have come to regard profits and success and making money as like a dirty word, which is totally contrary to what the American dream is about. People start businesses so they can get rich. There's nothing wrong with that, folks.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're supposed to start a business as what? A public service?
Right.
No, you start a business so you can make some money for your family and improve your whole family's destiny. It's the American dream. Look, it's one of those things. I think one of the most telling things from Barack Obama was during his first year as president, he gave the commencement address at Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona. And he spoke to, he said, I want to speak specifically to you business majors. Now, some of you are going to go ahead and follow a normal path into business, but some of you will find a higher calling and use your skills to go into the nonprofit sector. And I'm thinking, here are these people who have just gone into debt. Their parents have supported them so they can get a business degree. And he's telling them you're going to contribute to the country more in the nonprofit sector than in building up a business.
Right. And, there's another element to this I think that's important. A business that is successful and that makes money and has customers. Let's just take as an example Apple, right? Apple has made billions and billions of dollars because it is not just benefiting the owners, then hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people own stock in that company, but also what it has done, the more money it makes, that means it's providing a vital service and a product that Americans want. So I just am so frustrated with this idea that profits are a bad thing. I always say, when you start a business, profits aren't evil. What's evil is losses.
Stephen, what do you say to those people who suggest that, the fact is that we've made all these commitments and entitlements. We can't really breach those commitments, particularly with older people who have worked hard all their life and paid into the system and are relying on it. We can't tell people on Medicaid, no, you can't get medical care. So we're just going to need to generate more money somehow to pay for all these government goodies. And the only fair way to generate more money is to ask for the people who are doing best in this country to pay more.
Well, I have a couple of problems with that. One is the wealthy, and these statistics are highlighted in my book, and that's why I think it makes it a useful guide for people when they're debating liberals. But, let's look at the numbers. And you've recited these, but they're worth repeating because most people don't understand these numbers. The richest 1% pay 40% of the income tax. 1% pay 40%. The top 20%, all the people in the that top 20% category, Michael, they pay 91% of the taxes. So, my goodness, does the left want a system where the rich pay every penny of the taxes in this country? I mean, look, I'm as anti-tax as anyone, but I do believe we should have a fair system where everybody pays something. If you're a citizen and a worker and a voter in this country, I mean, call me old-fashioned. I do think everybody should pay something, even if it's only $50 or $100. Everybody should have some skin in this game. And this idea by the left is just soak the rich, soak the rich, soak the rich. Even if you take every single penny, every single penny of every millionaire and billionaire in this country. I mean, confiscate their wealth, Michael. Take all of it, right? You still can't balance the budget. So this idea, we are a middle-class country. And when the Democrats say they're going to tax the rich, ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your wallets because they're coming after you.
And again, their definition of who's rich is not based upon how much money someone has. It's how much money someone is generating, how much money someone is making. As somebody who may be earning, lucky enough to earn $200,000 or $250,000 a year, may not be rich at all, because that amount of money that he's earning, for instance, somebody like that could be in a great deal of debt if he borrowed money to start his business, right?
Well, there's no question about it. And a lot of these people who are, quote, rich, are people. I've always used my father as an example. He's very, much a boilerplate kind of small businessman, built up a business his whole life. Michael, when I was growing up, a lot of time he wasn't around because he was working 50 and 60 hours a week building this business. He was very successful, especially at the end of his career, and sold his business for several million dollars. Well, the left would go out and say, look, that rich person, he has several million dollars. Well, he put 45 years of sweat equity into that business. This is the Horatio Alger story. This is the American dream. And when people say we got to sock those people who make it, I think it is contrary to the American ideal. We need to be an aspirational society, not a society that tears down rich people, but says, how can I get there myself?
Well, that's exactly right. Now, when it comes to understanding why certain policies work and others don't, I'm reminded of what an old-time Republican progressive, Robert La Follette, used to say. He said that the states represent living laboratories of democracy. And you can see the way different ideas work when they're employed in different states.
Yep.
A big part of your book, Who's the Fairest of Them All, and I urge people to get it, because honestly, this is an argument settler. This is a lethal weapon in the war of ideas. And in fact, you can quote me on that.
I like that. I'll use it.
Okay, good, good. And again, conservatives are not afraid of lethal weapons when they're deployed by good guys. So one of the things you do in the book is you take a look at the different results of Republican versus Democratic Party policies, state by state. What do you find?
You know, I agree with you. This is the hardest thing for liberals to respond to, because liberals say, oh, taxes don't matter. You know, look, we raised taxes under the Clinton administration. The economy did well. And, whenever I'm in a debate with these liberals on that, they say, okay, you think taxes don't matter. Then please explain to me why the great state of California, who is, you know, one of the greatest states with so much assets, you know, beautiful oceans, beautiful, beautiful weather, everything going for it, smart people. Why is it that state is bleeding jobs, bleeding factories, bleeding companies, all leaving the state? And why is a state like Texas, which actually doesn't have the resources that California has, is absolutely booming? And the only explanation for that, or the primary explanation, is that Texas has no income tax and California has the highest income tax in the country. You want to look at what happens when you soak the rich? Look at California. Rich people are leaving California. And by the way, another good example, not to change the subject, you know, in France, Hollande wants to raise the top tax rate to, what, 70 to 75%. There isn't going to be a rich person left in France.
Have you've seen the news, right? Over 1,000 millionaires who are documented as paying taxes on over a million euros a year. Over 1,000 people have indicated they're leaving, most of them planning to go to Belgium across the border. They can still speak French and still get some pretty good food and pay a whole lot less in taxes.
There's an old saying that we quote in the book that is, high tax rates don't redistribute income, they redistribute people. And that's what's happening in countries like France. It's what's happening in California. My home state of Illinois keeps raising taxes. People are leaving the state. The real growth states in this country are the ones that keep taxes low and keep government off the backs of business.
Stephen, I mean, if you were advising Mitt Romney, and you probably are or should be, and I know he pays attention to your work in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere, and undoubtedly to your new book, Who's the Fairest of Them All, what should he emphasize in his closing arguments?
Well, I think he did a great job, by the way, this last week, which is why I think he really ran away with that debate. The one thing I'd like to see him do a better job of celebrating his success in business and celebrating his wealth and high income, because there's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, I feel sometimes like he has guilt over the money that he has made, and he has to say, look, I want to create a society and where everyone has a fair chance. And look, we do believe in fairness. We do believe that we want a society where everyone's got a shot, right? That's the Horatio Alger story. It's the American dream. But you can't do that by you know, cutting off the legs of the people who make it in America. What you want to do is, as my friend Art Laffer and your friend Art Laffer always says, you want a society that tries to make poor people rich. It doesn't try to make rich people poor.
Well,
and sometimes these liberals get that confused.
This is what Obama blew in a debate last week, and it's really very dramatic. His slogan for the whole campaign is, we want a society where everybody plays by the same set of rules, and everybody gets a fair shot, and everybody pays a fair share. And what he says is, we want a society where everybody plays by the same rules, and everybody gets a fair share,
mm-hmm.
which is very different.
That's exactly right. I mean, look, and the thing I point out in my book is, no country in the world, in the history of the world, has ever given every class of Americans a fair shot, you know, and we definitely have to do things, by the way, to improve opportunity for young people. I mean, my goodness, you and I talk all the time about the dismal schools we have in this country that I think are the biggest handicap to low-income kids, that they go to schools, they don't even learn how to, you know, basically read and write, and that's not doing a service to these kids. How can we have a society where people are getting rich when we're graduating from people high school, they can't read the diploma?